This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, we are in conversation with Krzysztof Dębinski, Ambassador of Poland to Malaysia, as we ask about how Poland's role in the Russian-Ukraine conflict will evolve, as well as the bilateral relationship between Poland and Malaysia. A very good morning, Ambassador. Let's set the scene. Troops amassing on the eastern border. The US government then calls out the aggressor and wants it not to invade. Now, we would naturally think that was a situation on the Russian-Ukraine conflict, but that was exactly what happened to Poland in 1980, didn't it? But at that time, it was Soviet troops as opposed to Russian troops. How has the history of Poland-Russian relationship impacted how Poland views this conflict now between Russia and Ukraine?
Thank you very much for asking this question. This is the most important thing I should say, not only in Europe, but possibly in the world today, is this Russian unprovoked, absolutely unprovoked invasion against Ukraine. It is so obnoxious. Russia is one of the five permanent members of the Security Council, and the Security Council members are supposed to work towards world peace and security. And this is one of them attacking its neighbor for no reason whatsoever, under some flimsy pretext of denazification and whatnot, you know. Since we are a neighbor of Ukraine, we are very much concerned about, definitely very much concerned. And since you made this connection between 1980 and then Soviet threats against Poland and today's aggression of Russia against Ukraine, I would say that, yes, there are common things there. I should say one of them is this belief by Russia that they have a God-given right to decide what goes on in Europe and what goes on in the neighboring countries, only because they are Russia and they have some special rights to decide on their neighbors, how they live, how they develop, who their alliances are, and so on. This is something that we cannot accept. At the moment, it seems quite clear that neither European countries nor the larger part of the world is not accepting it. Voting at the security, at the General Assembly gave a clear indication.
Yeah, let's talk about history still then, because in that situation here, the communist government in Poland then brutally ended those protests, right, which was very much led by Lech Walesa as part of the solidarity movement. In the end, they did triumph. Do you think that's what the Russian government is trying to do, install a Russian-friendly puppet in the Ukrainian government then?
It seems quite obvious that this is what they tried to do in the beginning of this invasion, but it didn't work. It didn't work because the Ukrainian people have elected their own government and they don't want anybody imposed by the Russians. So far as this, as I can observe the things from Malaysia, the Ukrainian troops, Ukrainian army, Ukrainian people are doing very well in this conflict. It's a bloody conflict. They are taking losses, but they are pushing Russians away from their country.
But that's where the parallels end, isn't it? Because with respect to that conflict in the 1980s, not much blood was spilt as a result of the transition into a democratic state for Poland. But in this case here, many lives have been lost, isn't it? Do you think the confidence of the Ukrainians is mismatched versus the power of Russia? Although, yes, they have pulled back a bit from the north, but they really want to dominate the Donbass region, correct?
I'm convinced that Ukrainians will manage to secure their sovereignty and their independence. I have no doubt about it. Difficult, it will be bloody, but they will manage it.
Well, difficult, bloody, and I'm sure you're confident, but are you not frustrated with your partners that they are not as firm, as committed as Poland has been, right, in supporting your Ukrainian brothers? I think, and I get the sense, is that the frustration is that Poland has been very clear in its position that it wants to support its Ukrainian brothers, but you don't get that same sentiment across Europe.
I would say that this probably was the case at the very beginning of the invasion, but now it's different. Europe has changed and Europe has taken our position. In reality, this is what has happened.
Poland has taken a leadership position by imposing Russian oil and gas sanctions. Why has Europe been so slow?
Well, you know, it's not an easy matter because, for instance, if you take oil, if you have been importing oil from one source for decades, it's technologically very difficult to convert the oil plants and technology in oil plants and technology in chemical plants and switch it for oil from other sources because the chemical composition is not the same. But I have to say that the percentage of Russian oil has fallen dramatically. Right.
How much?
Now.
How much has it fallen to?
I think it's fallen from 60% to 40%. If I'm not mistaken, which is not bad,
but not good enough.
This is only a question of 50 days.
But 40% is still very high, isn't it? There has to be a clear plan to move to zero.
Yes, I agree. It's still very high, and we are pressing our European partners to go to zero. To stop importation of Russian oil and gas in total. And we are, and to be very frank, we are going in this direction in Europe.
So you're trying to push your members in many ways, right? We've talked about economic sanctions. It really hasn't really moved the needle. The Russian ruble is still back to pre-pandemic levels. You don't see bank runs happening. And Poland has pushed for greater military support, even offered your MiG-29 fighters and even offered to be a staging ground for nuclear arms. So why is it that all the efforts and the offers you've made have gone unheard?
It's not true that it's gone unheard, because Western countries and Central European countries are delivering quite a lot of heavy arms to Ukraine. You see, it takes time. These are democracies. These things have to go through the parliaments. It's not easy. Most of the governments are coalition governments with different parties having different points of views. For instance, heavy equipment like tanks, which Ukraine needs very much, have already been delivered. Heavy artillery, howitzers, have already been delivered. They go from the United States, they go from Czech Republic, they go from Slovakia, they go from Germany, they go from Poland, they go from so many places. It's not easy matter because the calibers, for instance, the calibers that the Ukrainians use for their own artillery, the calibers of the projectiles which they are shooting are different from those used by NATO countries. So you have, and the equipment is different. The people have to be trained. You just cannot give them a new plane and tell them to fly. It takes time.
I get the point. It takes time, but time is not on their side, isn't it? Because they are really much mismatched in terms of artillery. You're seeing that happening across, Russian missiles hitting close to 10 kilometers off the border of Poland over a period of time. We don't have time, do we, Ambassador?
I don't think so. Now there is this big, so-called big Russian offensive in the Donbass, which didn't go to a very good start, to the best of my knowledge, from what I get from the media, because this is my source of information, is the media. And so far as I know, the Ukrainians are doing pretty well. What is important, very important, is the troop morale. The Ukrainians know what they are fighting for. They are fighting for their homes, for their land, for their people, for their families. Mm. The Russians are fighting for God knows what. The Ukrainians are ready to fight and sacrifice.
But when I hear you, Ambassador, it's very clear you are on the side of the Ukrainians. Of course you are. And I don't dispute the history also informing the position you are. Does that mean that with respect to Poland's role in the conflict, you can't adopt that negotiator stand of peace and negotiations because you are so clearly on the Ukrainian side that essentially we don't see a roadmap towards peace, do we?
At the moment, I don't see. At the moment, it's war. At the moment, it's war.
And how long do you see this war continue then?
Nobody knows. I hear from what I hear by various experts, military experts, it may last another 2 or 3 weeks, or it may last another 2 or 3 months.
This war is going to kill and destroy the Ukrainian country and economy. I want to get your experience, because when the communism curtain fell, Poland's economy did flourish, and now you're 3 times its economy. What's your advice to Ukraine in terms of rebuilding their economy again after this devastating war?
You see, our experience is different, because our economy, our society, in fact, our society very much so. We're devastated by 40 years of communism. But our cities were not in ruins. Our transportation system was still working. So for us, it was far easier to move away from communism towards a normal human-friendly system we have now. Ukrainians have it much more difficult, because they would not only have to deal with the communist legacy. I mean, communism has fallen in Ukraine long time ago too. But they will also have to deal with this legacy of physical destruction of their country. What the Russians are doing, they are willfully destroying the country. They want to leave a scorched earth after they are pushed out of Ukraine.
And this is the big challenge, isn't it? Because with this scorched earth policy, Ukraine, it will not be home for many Ukrainians. And as a result, what the worry and concern is that with 60% of Ukrainian refugees flowing across to the Polish border, they will be permanent, isn't it? And so while the social infrastructure at the moment can manage it, can it manage it for the long term?
Yeah, it can manage for the moment, of course. Much more difficult to do it in the long term.
So how do we resolve that? Because that's the biggest central problem, isn't it? We can open our arms wide for the moment, but eventually it will have to close?
Well, yes, but you see, the information what I got, actually, is there are already more people moving from Poland to Ukraine than from Ukraine to Poland, which means that a lot of people are returning to the liberated areas, which are comparatively safe to live in, rather than escaping, which is also a sign that the Ukrainian side is slowly but surely winning the war. So I'm quite convinced that once, I don't know when it would happen, within, say, okay, pessimistically, let's say within a couple of months, that once the war is over, the Ukrainians would go back to rebuild their country. They are very patriotic people. They have the feeling of unity. They are Ukrainians and they have their own country, Ukraine, to look after. They will do it.
Is that why Poland takes a bit of a different approach versus other refugees? Because we see the warm reception you've extended to the Ukrainian refugees, but we also hear reports that that's not been the case for other refugees, perhaps from the Middle East. Can you pass out the differences there between Poland's approach with respect to different refugees?
The difference is absolutely clear. Ukrainians come straight from the battle zone. The Middle Eastern refugees, as you call them, I call them migrants, were brought by the Belarusian government in cahoots with the Russian government in order to create diversion along the eastern border of Poland and the eastern border of the European Union as a prelude to the invasion of Ukraine. It is quite clear at the moment what the idea was.
So you think it's an orchestrated move by the Russian government to paint Poland in the bad picture?
Yes, it was absolutely orchestrated. Besides, the Belarusian government was making money out of it because these people flying to Belarus from northern Iraq, some of them from Syria, but mostly from northern Iraq, they would pay 6,000 euros to be brought to Belarus and then pushed across the border, unsuccessful. And you know, this is all in accordance with General Gerasimov's, the head of the Russian army, idea of the hybrid warfare. I mean, the war is not only armies fighting, it's also IT war, it's also propaganda war, it's also migrants war. But I want to tell you that this is not the first wave of refugees which we have accepted. When there was the second Chechen war, Poland accepted 100,000 Chechens into Poland. I want to tell you that Chechens are Muslims. So when somebody is saying that we are accepting Christians, but not accepting Muslims, he's speaking rubbish. We have accepted these people because they also came straight from the battle zone. They were not migrants. They were escaping from the Russian army just as much as the Ukrainians are escaping today. There is no difference. And besides, we have also accepted many thousands of people of other origin, also escaping from Ukraine, including Malaysians. Malaysian students who were studying in Ukraine found refuge in Poland. And I have all the data. There were many thousands, Indians, Bangladeshis, Nigerians, people from Middle East. We made no difference.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Krzysztof Debenicki, Ambassador of Poland to Malaysia. After the break, we have a discussion on how bilateral relations between Malaysia and Poland can be further enhanced. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill, we have with us today Krzysztof Debenicki, Ambassador of Poland to Malaysia. He's in the hot seat as we earlier talked about Poland's role in the Russian-Ukraine conflict. Ambassador, last year we celebrated 50th anniversary of Malaysia and you penned an opinion piece that despite being 10,000 kilometers apart, Poland and Malaysia have a lot in common. What do we have in common, Ambassador?
Well, we certainly have a lot in common. We are middle-sized countries. We are countries that are more or less of the same size. population, more or less of the same population, 30-something million, both of our countries. Of course, we are situated in different regions, which means we have different political and economic environments. And we also do have some different interests as well. Political, economic, and strategic interests of our two countries are different. But certainly, I believe that both of our countries would very much like for the international relations to be based on law, not on might. This is why we are so very strongly against the Russian invasion of Ukraine. One of the reasons that we are so strongly against it. I mean, international law has to take precedence before some ideas of individual countries. They can do whatever they prefer, whatever they want for their own interests. Now, for the past 50 years, we have had relations with Malaysia. I understand that in the initial phase of these relations, we were on two different sides of the Iron Curtain, more or less. Poland was very much in the Eastern Bloc. Malaysia was a free market economy, a country that was looking after its own political interests. I mean, Poland and most other countries of Central and Eastern Europe were simply satellites of the Soviet Union. Malaysia was nobody's satellite. And that was a big advantage that it had over Poland. Malaysia also had a decent working economic and political system. It was a democracy, which we were not. We only had to learn democracy in reality beginning in 1980. For Malaysia, it was around 20 years of independence.
So much has changed, but basically what we see a convergence, right, in values. I think that's what you're trying to imply here. But when you look at economic trade between Malaysia and Poland, it has blossomed and grown, but there are significant trade imbalance issues, isn't it, between Malaysia and Poland? How do we address those trade imbalances?
Well, yes, you see, the problem is that we are importing much more from Malaysia than the other way around. One of the reasons is because we are the biggest importer of palm oil in Europe. I'm not saying we are importing this palm oil directly from Malaysia, but certainly it is Malaysian oil, which I'm sure forms the largest part of our imports, because Malaysia is a very significant producer of the palm oil. The importers of palm oil in Poland are mostly small and medium companies, and they are too small to import directly from the producers. They buy palm oil from the middlemen in Europe. That's mostly from the Netherlands. I think that is the biggest center for distribution of palm. So we, so far as I know, we have imported around 120,000 tons of palm oil last year. So it's quite a significant number, considering that we are ourselves a very large producer of vegetable oils, mostly rapeseed oil. Now, our economic relations, our trade with Malaysia has doubled since 2015. So there is a big growth. Malaysia became the second most important trading partner of Poland in the ASEAN after Vietnam. So there is a good possibility for the relations between our two countries to develop and grow. However, we would like to have more easy access to Malaysian markets.
And why is it so difficult to access Malaysian markets? Is this a function of the trade deal between EU and Malaysia? And where is the stumbling block? Is it on the EU side or on the Malaysian side?
You know, I would say it's on the Malaysian side because various non-tariff problems that our exporters are facing in Malaysia are quite important. Also, I would say it takes a long time. It takes a very long time.
Why does it take a very long time?
Well, I don't know. One has to ask Malaysian bureaucracy, why does it take so long?
These conversations, how long have they been taking place? And is this a function of just political changes taking place in Malaysia, or is this more a function of the government bureaucracy happening here? That's why these deals are not taking place.
I think that you know, I have been here for the past 3 years, and the political system in Malaysia is changing constantly, I should say. The stability of the country is changing too. So I'm waiting for final political settlement in Malaysia. And another thing I'm waiting for is that we should. And it's not only the problem of Malaysia, it's also a problem of our other countries, including my own, is the question that we should finally leave the period of COVID. The period of COVID has made it difficult. For instance, visiting delegation, making trade fair, it made it difficult for official government delegations to visit. All these things are absolutely necessary to push trade forward. This has not been done for the past 2 years, in reality. So we have a gap of 2 years in our economic relations.
All right, but do you have a roadmap now? Because borders are open, do we have a clear timeline where delegations are going to connect and meet? Because borders are open now, isn't it?
Well, they are open, but since just a month or two, I believe it's not enough to organize a sensible official trip or a trade fair to promote trade or economic investments on both sides, both by Poland and by Malaysia.
You know, what we see a lot is that, you know, the relationship with Poland, Malaysia very much is tied to things like commodities. There's also military transactions and deals. You've provided quite a few tanks to the Malaysian army here and also IT software. Where do you expect trade to move, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years? What areas are the missed opportunities so far between Poland and Malaysia?
I think the trade, modern technology, especially IT, should grow. Malaysia is an important producer of hardware, IT hardware. Poland is an important producer of software. This would be an interesting combination, a sort of a joint venture. I'm not an expert on IT, but I think this should be something that we can think about as far as possible. As far as possible, I say, because after all, this, as a government servant, we do not decide for the businessmen.
For sure, you're a facilitator.
They look after themselves. Whatever is profitable, they do. But to me, it should be possible. We should have possibilities of bilateral investments, not only Polish investments in Malaysia, but also Malaysian investments in Poland. We do wait for Malaysian investments to come to Poland. Very much so. We have had a company which wished to invest in Malaysia in dairy production in a big way. Fortunately, it's all in abeyance now because of the COVID problem. Everything is getting postponed by 2 or 3 years. But, you know, after a bad day usually comes a good day. So I'm pretty optimistic about it. What we should also look for is more student exchange.
Mm.
And I would like to have also more students from Poland coming to Malaysia. Not only Malaysian students studying in Poland, but the other ways around as well. So far, we have Malaysian students studying mostly medicine. Altogether, there's about, as far as I know, 1,000 Malaysian doctors who are taught in Poland, and they are doing quite well here in Malaysia. And they played a very important part in the fight against COVID in this country. There are also Malaysian students doing technical studies in Poland, which we would like to promote as well.
You know, when you talk about this relationship between Poland and Malaysia, it's bilateral in nature. How do you see the EU in this whole equation? Because Poland, there's always this tension between what Poland's role and relationship is with the EU, isn't it? So with respect to relations with Malaysia, how do you see the EU facilitating or being the conduit in terms of improving relations between Poland and Malaysia? Or is it just really much just focusing on the bilateral as opposed to the multilateral here?
Poland is a part of EU. So EU relations are very much our relations too. And especially the FTA agreement would be very important for us, as well as for another European country, as important as it would be for Malaysia, I believe. So the closer the relations with the EU as an institution, the closer the relations between Poland and Malaysia. I don't see any discrepancy here. It's working along the common path.
Ambassador, studied in India. You were a researcher at the School of Oriental Studies. You covered Asia Pacific for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And before your posting in Malaysia, you were the ambassador to Poland in Mongolia and Pakistan. How different is Malaysia from the rest of Asia in terms of European diplomacy?
That's a tough question, really, because I don't believe there is anything called Asia, just as I don't believe there is anything called Europe. Each Asian country is different. Each European country is different. We may have certain common traits, but otherwise we are individual entities. And Malaysia is different in everything, in reality. It's different because of its ethnic composition, because of its religious composition, because of its history, because of its climate. I have served in India, I have served in Pakistan, and both are considered as tropical countries, hot countries, but definitely not to the extent that Malaysia is a tropical country. It's just different. So, I mean, my personal perception is that one should approach each country as a separate entity, as an individual, like you would approach a human being, as an individual, not as a member of a group or a tribe or whatever, as an individual. I find Malaysia fascinating because of its uniqueness. I would put it this way, because of its uniqueness and its incredible diversity, which the more diverse we are, the more interesting we are. After all, I believe uniformity is the worst thing you can imagine.
I couldn't agree more, Ambassador. Thank you for taking your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have with us Krzysztof Debenicki, Ambassador of Poland to Malaysia. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.